book 21, page 215. Athena now put it in Penelope's mind to make the suitors try their skill with the bow and with the iron axes in a contest among themselves as a means of bringing about their destruction. Remember, this is all a plot for Odysseus to get his revenge. She went upstairs and got the storeroom key, which was made of bronze and had a handle of ivory. She then went with her maidens into the storeroom at the end of the house, where her husband's treasures of gold, bronze, and wrought iron were kept, and where was also his bow, and the quiver full of deadly arrows that had been given to him by a friend whom he had met in Lacedaemon, Iphitus, the son of Eurytus. The two fell in with one another in Messene, at the house of Ortolochus, where Odysseus was staying in order to recover a debt that was owing from the whole people. For the Messenians had carried off 300 sheep from Ithaca, and had sailed away with them and with their shepherds. In quest of these, Odysseus took a long journey while he was still quite young, for his father and the other chieftains sent him on a mission to recover them. Iphitus had gone there also to try to get back 12 brood mares that he had lost, and the mule foals that were running with them. These mares were the death of him in the end, for when he went to the house of Zeus's son, mighty Heracles, who performed such prodigies of valor, Heracles, to his shame, killed Iphitus, though he was his guest, for he feared not heaven's vengeance, nor yet respected his own table, which he had set before Iphitus, but killed him in spite of everything, and kept the mares for himself. It was when claiming these that Iphitus met Odysseus, and gave him the bow which mighty Eurytus had been used to carry, and which, on his death, had been left to him by his son. Odysseus gave him in return a sword and a spear, and this was the beginning of a fast friendship, although they never visited at one another's houses, for Zeus's son Heracles killed Iphitus before they could do so. This bow, then, given to Odysseus by Iphitus, had not been taken with him when he sailed for Troy. He had used it so long as he had been at home, but had left it behind as having been a keepsake from a valued friend. That's a little bit of a ramble, right? Doesn't it sound like a little bit of a ramble? It's kind of just background story, and what we're supposed to get from it is two things. Number one, the bow is super special. It's not just any old weapon. It's super special because it was a gift to Odysseus from a dear friend who's since died. And then the other thing we get from that is we're wondering, well, wait a minute, Odysseus is a soldier, and he was just at the Trojan War. Why wouldn't a soldier bring his best bow with him? And the reason he didn't bring the bow was because it was like memorabilia. It was like a keepsake. Like, oh, I've got to remember my good friend, so I'll save these movie theater ticket stubs from when we went out. Do you guys still do that? No?
Yes.
Oh, I had a shoebox full of stuff like that.
I saved stuff.
Yeah. I had a cousin who saw the original Star Wars, early 70s, like 15 times or something, and I think he saved it. I'm sure he doesn't still have it.
I saved the tickets from like Badger Games.
Yeah, so basically, it's like something that you keep as a souvenir, as a memory of a person, so that's why the bow didn't go to war with him. Let's continue. Penelope presently reached the oak threshold of the storeroom. The carpenter had planed this duly and had drawn a line on it so as to get it quite straight. He had then set the doorpost into it and hung the doors. She loosened the strap from the handle of the door, put in the key, and drove it straight home to shoot back the bolts that held the doors. These flew open with a noise like a bull bellowing in a meadow, and Penelope stepped upon the raised platform where the chest stood in which the fair linen and clothes were laid by, along with fragrant herbs. Reaching thence, she took down the bow with its bow case from the peg on which it hung. She sat down with it on her knees, weeping bitterly as she took the bow out of its case. And when her tears had relieved her, she went to the cloister where the suitors were, carrying the bow and the quiver with the many deadly arrows that were inside it. Along with her came her maidens, bearing a chest that contained much iron and bronze, which her husband had won as prizes. When she reached the suitors, she stood by one of the bearing posts, supporting the roof of the cloister, holding a veil before her face, and with a maid on either side of her. Then she said, "Listen to me, you suitors, who persist in abusing the hospitality of this house, because its owner has been long absent, and without any other pretext than that you want to marry me. This, then, being the prize that you are contending for, I will bring out the mighty bow of Odysseus. And whomsoever of you shall string it most easily and send his arrow through each one of 12 axes, him will I follow, and quit this house of my lawful husband, so goodly and so abounding in wealth. But even so, I doubt not that I shall remember it in my dreams." As she spoke, she told Eumaeus to set the bow and the pieces of iron before the suitors, and Eumaeus wept as he took them to do as she had bidden him. Hard by, the stockman wept also when he saw his master's bow. But Antinous, remember Antinous, the head suitor, the one who was being mean to Odysseus in disguise? Antinous scolded them. "You country louts," he said, "silly simpletons. Why should you add to the sorrows of your mistress by crying like this? She is enough to grieve her in the loss of her husband. Sit still, therefore, and eat your dinners in silence, or else go outside if you want to cry, and leave the bow behind you. We suitors shall have to contend for it with might and main, for we shall find it no light matter to string a bow such as this. There is not a man of us all who is such another as Odysseus, for I have seen him, and remember him, though I was then only a child." This was what he said, but all the time he was expecting to be able to string the bow and shoot through the iron, whereas in fact he was to be the first that should taste of the arrows from the hands of Odysseus, whom he was dishonoring in his own house, egging the others on to do so also. So basically, Antinous is all talk. He's saying, "Oh, this is going to be a really tough thing, and only strong guys can do it." And on the inside, he's thinking, "This is cake. I got this. This is no big deal for a guy like me." And what does it mean, do you suppose, when he says that Antinous was to be the first that should taste of the arrows? What do you think, Chase? Yeah, he's going to be the first to taste the arrows. In other words, he's going to be the first to get shot. So it's like spoiler, foreshadowing, he's going to die first. Then Telemachus spoke. "Great heavens," he exclaimed, "Zeus must have robbed me of my senses. Here is my dear and excellent mother saying she will quit this house and marry again. Yet I am laughing and enjoying myself as though there were nothing happening. But, suitors, as the contest has been agreed upon, let it go forward. It is for a woman whose peer is not to be found in Pylos, Argos, or Mycenae, nor yet in Ithaca, nor on the mainland. You know this as well as I do. What need have I to speak in praise of my own mother? Come on, then, make no excuses for delay. Let us see whether you can string the bow or not. I, too, will make trial of it. For if I can string it and shoot through the iron, I shall not suffer my mother to quit this house with a stranger, not if I can win the prizes which my father won before me." So Telemachus is going to go first. And it's not like a creepy, ooh, he wants to marry his mom. It's not like that. It's more that if he can win, he can protect his mom. Okay? If he wins, then she doesn't have to go with one of the suitors. So Telemachus tries first. As Telemachus spoke, he sprang from his seat, threw his crimson cloak from him, and took his sword from his shoulder. First, he set the axes in a row, in a long groove which he had dug for them, and had made straight by line. Keep in mind those two pictures we looked at. Then he stamped the earth tight around them, and everyone was surprised when they saw him set them up so orderly, though he had never seen anything of the kind before. This done, he went on to the pavement to make trial of the bow. Thrice, meaning three times, did he tug at it, trying with all his might to draw the string, and thrice he had to leave off, he had to quit, though he had hoped to string the bow and shoot through the iron. He was trying for the fourth time, and would have strung it that time, had not Odysseus made a sign to check him in spite of all his eagerness. So he's about to get it on the fourth try, and Odysseus across the room kind of goes like, "No, cut it out, don't do it." Why does he tell him not to get it done? What are you supposed to ask?
Because there is a certain way you have to string a bow, so he's going to show the way that they do it.
Could be, but what does it do to Odysseus' plan if Telemachus succeeds, Alex?
He can't marry his wife.
Well, it's kind of, you're getting there. What do you think, Zeb?
Well, first he can't prove that he's Odysseus, and because then they're going to, basically, it's already going to be made for them, they're already going to see how it's done. And then...
Could be. I mean, the biggest thing here... Yeah, give it a try, Becca. I think you guys are overthinking it. Thank you. Thank you. The whole, perfect. Hit the nail right on the head. The whole thing is a plot for Odysseus to get revenge. And by revenge, he doesn't mean telling them, "Naughty, naughty, you're all in time out. Leave my house now." He wants to kill them. And if Telemachus does this thing with the bow, all right, contest over. What now? This is all a setup for Odysseus to take his revenge, and it has to go according to his plan. We don't know everything about his plan yet. Keep reading and we will. So Telemachus said, "Alas," I'm in the middle of 217, I shall either be always feeble and of no prowess, or I'm just too young and have not yet reached my full strength so as to be able to hold my own if anyone attacks me. You others, therefore, who are stronger than I, make trial of the bow and get this contest settled. Telemachus kind of talks it off. Oh, you know, maybe I'm just too young, or maybe I'm not strong enough. Ha 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 ha. Who's next? On this, Telemachus put the bow down, letting it lean against the door that led into the house with the arrow standing against the top of the bow. Then he sat down on the seat from which he had risen, and Antinous said, "Come on, each of you in his turn, going towards the right from the place at which the cupbearer begins when he is handing round the wine." The rest agreed, and Leodes, son of Anops, was the first to rise. He was a sacrificial priest to the suitors, and sat in the corner near the mixing bowl. He was the only man who hated the suitors' evil deeds and was indignant with the others. He was now the first to take the bow and arrow, so he went onto the pavement to make his trial. But he could not string the bow, for his hands were weak and not used to hard work. They therefore soon grew tired, and he said to the suitors, "Friends, I cannot string it. Let another have it. This bow shall take the life and soul out of many a chief among us, for it is better, top of 218, to die than to live after having missed the prize that we have so long striven for, and which has brought us so long together. Some one of us is even now hoping and praying that he may marry Penelope, but when he has seen this bow and tried it, let him woo and make bridal offerings to some other woman, and let Penelope marry whoever makes her the best offer, and whose lot it is to win her." On this, Leodes put the bow down, letting it lean against the door, with the arrow standing against the tip of the bow. Then he took his seat again on the seat from which he had risen, and Antinous rebuked him, saying, "Leodes, what are you talking about? Your words are monstrous and intolerable. It makes me angry to listen to you. Shall then this bow take the life of many a chief among us merely because you can't bend it yourself? True, you were not born to be an archer, but there are others who will soon string it." Then he said to Melanthius, the goatherd. Side note, Melanthius is one of Odysseus' servants, but Melanthius has been loyal to the suitors this whole time. Melanthius, the goatherd. Okay, this is still Antinous speaking. "Look sharp, Melanthius. Light a fire in the court and set a seat hard by with a sheepskin on it. Bring us also a large ball of lard from what they have in the house." What's lard?
Fat.
"Let us warm the bow and grease it. We will then make trial of it again and bring the contest to an end." What are they trying to do?
Make it flexible.
Okay, so are they supposed to do that?
No.
They're cheating. You get that? Antinous wants to make sure they have every advantage, and he's willing to cheat to do it. Melanthius lit the fire. Did I already read that? Yep, nope. "And set a seat covered with sheepskins beside it. He also brought a great ball of lard from what they had in the house, and the suitors warmed the bow and again made trial of it, but they were none of them nearly strong enough to string it. Nevertheless, there still remained Antinous and Eurymachus." Remember those two names from the front of your study guide? "Who were the two ringleaders among the suitors, and much the foremost among them all. Then the swineherd and the stockman, two more of Odysseus' servants, left the cloisters together, and Odysseus followed them. When they had gotten outside the gates in the outer yard, Odysseus said to them quietly," remember, he's still in disguise, he still looks like an old man, "Stockman and swineherd, I have something in my mind, which I am in doubt whether I should say or not, but I think I will say it. What manner of men would you be to stand by Odysseus if some god should bring him back here all of a sudden? Say what you are disposed to do, side with the suitors or with Odysseus." So it's kind of like, hypothetically, if Odysseus shows up, whose side are you on? "Father Zeus," said the stockman, "would indeed that you might so ordain it. If some god were but to bring Odysseus back, you should see with what might and main I would fight for him. In like words, Eumaeus prayed to all the gods that Odysseus might return. When, therefore, he saw for certain what mind they were of, Odysseus revealed it and said, 'It is I, Odysseus, who am here. I have suffered much, but at last, in the 20th year, I have come back to my own country. I find that you two alone of all my servants are glad that I should return, for I have not heard any of the others praying for my return. To you two, therefore, will I unfold the truth as it shall be. If heaven shall deliver the suitors into my hands, I will find wives for both of you. I will give you houses and holdings close to my own, and you shall be to me as though you were brothers and friends of Telemachus. I will now give you convincing proof that you may know me and be assured. See, here is the scar from the boar's tooth that ripped me when I was out hunting on Mount Parnassus with the sons of Autolycus. As he spoke, he drew his rags aside from the great scar, and when they had examined it thoroughly, they both of them wept about Odysseus, threw their arms around him, and kissed his head and shoulders, while Odysseus kissed their hands and faces in return. The sun would have gone down upon their mourning if Odysseus had not checked them. So basically, when they say they're loyal to Odysseus, what does he say, if you stick by me, what will their reward be?
Family.
Yeah, he'll treat them as if they were his own sons. Okay, I'll give you houses, I'll help you find wives, I'll make sure you have money. And then he proves to them, because remember, he still looks like an old guy in disguise. He has some scar on his leg that apparently is so unique to Odysseus that it proves to them, oh, it really is Odysseus. Now we're going to hear about the plan.